Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th day of June, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news. On Wednesday, Microsoft finally confirmed the retirement of Internet Explorer. Yeah. Launched in 1995, IE came pre-installed on Windows computers for almost two decades. And it became a mainstay to the point that when it was time for users to upgrade and move on, they often didn't. And while this announcement will push even more users off the historic browser, security researchers emphasize that IE and its many security vulnerabilities are far from gone. In the coming months, Microsoft will reach into your computer, into their computer, which you are using, and disable the IE app on Windows 10 devices, guiding users instead to its next-generation Edge browser, first released in 2015. The IE icon will still remain on users' desktops, though, and Edge incorporates a service called IE Mode to preserve access to old websites built solely for Internet Explorer by lazy programmers. Microsoft says it will support IE Mode through at least 2029. Additionally, IE will still work for now on all supported versions of Windows 8.1, Windows 7 with Microsoft's extended security updates, and Windows Server, though the company says it will eventually phase IE out of these too. They also say that at some point they will again reach their hoary little fingers into your computer and remove the icon for Internet Explorer. For something that's been around as long as IE, backward compatibility is difficult to balance with the desire for a clean slate. Microsoft says it will still support IE's underlying browser engine, known as MS-HTML, and it has its eye on versions of Windows still used in critical environments, like, Voyager. But hackers are still exploiting IE vulnerabilities in real-world attacks. While the number of new IE vulnerabilities has remained fairly constant, attackers have shifted over the years to increasingly target the MS-HTML browser engine through malicious files like tainted Office documents. This could mean that neutering the IE application won't actually have any effect at all on attacks that are already in motion. IE isn't really dead. It's the walking dead.
I'm not dead yet.
IE more, viva IE. And so our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Internet Explorer is dead, mostly. Your choices are, I'll miss it terribly, IE was still around, what will I use to download Chrome, and other. So far we've got 20 votes. IE was still around is number one, followed by what will I use to download Chrome, followed by other, followed by I'll miss it terribly. Now, if you said other, or just if you have more you'd like to say about this, or you'd like to leave your own Princess Bride quote, head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 25 June 22. Internet Explorer is dead, mostly. And you'll also notice there's a slightly new look to the Soundbites website. Top thing in the middle of the page is now the weekly poll. I did that because nobody seems to be voting in the poll anymore.
They lost sight of it?
I think it's because they don't know of it. Yeah, exactly. They've lost sight of it. So it's there right in the front. It's the number one thing right now, 21 votes in the poll at the moment, so please vote in the poll. If you feel like it, please leave a comment in the forums. And, of course, as always, Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And it's crazy where IE still popped up. We had a customer a couple of weeks ago that was using Microsoft Outlook desktop app, because you have to be specific because there's so many things named Outlook,
right,
to log into his Google account. And so Google pops up this interstitial asking for your Google name and password for the OAuth authentication. Instead, an error message popped up and said your browser doesn't support JavaScript. And we're in Microsoft Edge. It does support JavaScript. Everything worked fine. There was a little learn more button in the error message, so I hit learn more. IE8 launched.
Wow.
And gave me an error message trying to display what JavaScript was. So he was running a modern Windows 10, but IE8 was still buried under the hood there. Microsoft Edge was the default browser, and it still spawned IE. I went through everything I could find on how to disable Internet Explorer.
You can't.
And there's a couple places you can uncheck use IE.
Right.
That they ignored that and kept using it.
Right.
It was crazy.
Yeah. Microsoft has kind of written themselves into a bit of a corner.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day when they were sued as a monopoly for including Internet Explorer with every version of Windows,
making it the default, quote unquote.
Right. They got sued by everybody at the time, Mozilla, Netscape, kind of everybody. So they said, well, the problem is we can't remove it because it's built into the operating system.
Yeah, that was their whole premise, that it was part of the operating system.
Which they then turned around and did.
Yeah, because didn't a judge learn how to undo it for the trial?
Yeah, so the next version, it was indeed baked in. That's MSHTML. It's been in every version of Windows since. It cannot be removed, and it is the major target for exploits. If you are running Windows, I don't care what browser you're using. I don't care how hard the operating system is. Internet Explorer 8, as Steve found out, is still under the hood, still vulnerable, and still accessible to everybody, whether you like it or not. That's what you get with Windows. So good for you. Congratulations. You're vulnerable. And that's the majority of Windows attacks these days are things that go against MSHTML. It's not fixable. They would have to actually rewrite inner portions of the operating system. And let's not forget, the core of Windows is the NT file. And that has not changed since, well, Windows NT. It is that same exact file.
That's why I'm wishing more and more programs would also, it's slowly happening, but migrate to Ubuntu and Linux.
Yep.
Because I'd switch now in a heartbeat. I've been playing with my Raspberry Pi 400 with Xubuntu. And it's just as same intuitive as Windows. It's all there for you. You can do everything. I can start the Chrome browser. I can check my emails and everything else. It's just some of these other programs that I use for my hobby that aren't yet over on the Ubuntu side. But it's one of those things, you know, I'm going to just kind of have to wait it out. And once it does, right, the only thing you'll see is my backside as I leave Windows in the dust, because I say, again, I hadn't turned the 400 on in, I'd say, about 7-8 days. So I kicked it on and it says, oh, wait a minute, you got some updates. We'll run them in the background. Go ahead and do what you're doing. Okay.
Yep.
I went ahead and I was doing some other checking, and then a little window pops up and says, it's all updated. You can restart anytime you want. It's like, really?
Yeah, it's very much like Chromebooks. It does. The only time you have to restart is if you update the kernel.
Yeah.
I often do updates in the background and don't have to restart, don't have to do anything. I've got mine set that it asks me.
Yeah, that's what I had.
But so I just click OK, and then I go do what I'm doing, and it's all fine. And then it comes back and says you're done, and I say OK.
Yeah, because I just wait until the next time. You know, once I'm done for the day, I shut it down, and when I restart, you know, next time I start it up, it just goes from where it would have if it had done a restart.
Right. That's exactly right.
But, I mean, for folks to say that, you know, well, I can't do this or that, there are so many other programs.
Alternative2.net. You can look up pretty much any program and see all kinds of alternatives and all kinds of operating systems. Adobe's putting their photo, has a photo editor that's online. The Adobe Online Photo Editor, as a matter of fact. And they've also said they're going to put something else online. I can't remember what that was. But
it's there. I mean, you just got to do a little searching. And as far as installing some of the software, if it's not there, quite often you can go to, say, the manufacturers of the particular software and see if they have a Linux or a Ubuntu or a Debian version, and they'll walk you through the steps on how to download the file if need be, or just to open up a terminal window, and you can copy from one screen over into your terminal window, paste it, and execute that file. And it'll, like I said, walk you through step by step, even if you're not a programmer or, you know, not quite comfortable with it. They do it step by step to make it easy for you to do.
Right. And so many things are available in the Software Center.
Oh, thousands.
Yeah. So, you know, there's, it's, if you've got an older machine, if you're getting tired of using Windows and you don't feel ready to move to something like a Chromebook, take a look at Linux. You know, if you've got an old machine, you can put it on that. You can run it online in a couple of places. It's easy, it's convenient, and it is absolutely 100% free. That's the beauty of it. I keep forgetting people pay for software now. They pay for something I get for free. And not because I'm stealing it, legitimately free.
Yeah. Well, my wife, she's not a big, you know, she's just an, we would describe in the business as an end user.
Right.
She just wants to be able to turn it on and do what she wants to do. I had her sit down in front of an Xubuntu machine with a few of the icons that she does. She likes to go into her Yahoo Mail and surf, you know, the Chrome browser. So I had that stuff on the screen. I says, all right. And she sat down there and she was doing the stuff like she normally would on her own computer downstairs. So I know for her, I can move her whenever I want off of Windows and go to Xubuntu. And just be done with it as far as her machine,
right?
Just some of the other stuff that's
right, right. Well, you know, a lot of people. Go ahead.
I was going to, and do you think ham people? There'd be a Unix guy in there somewhere.
Yeah,
that would write.
There is. There is a couple.
Write the program you want because it's a hands-on tinkering type of hobby.
Right. Well. Think of it is, though, this one guy had this logging program. That's the biggest thing in our world is, like, this weekend there's a contest. Logging your contacts. The guy had this great logging program up until Ubuntu 18.4, I think it was, something like that. After that, it stopped working. And he hasn't updated the program so it doesn't talk to the radios or do the logging. Because everybody on the forums say, oh, this used to work great up until version 18.4. And he hasn't updated it, so we've got no way to do it except for Windows program. Because you look at, nobody's written or taken the time to actually write a program for it.
Is the guy dead?
No, not as far as I know.
It's interesting that he would just stop updating the Linux version.
Well, I think, you know, again, it's like we say too often, you know, there's freeware and then folks using it and not supporting
right.
The person that's doing it. So if he was doing, you know, all this program, because I don't know how many years it's been around, and he wasn't getting, you know, any help or, you know, compensation for his time, there's no incentive for him to keep it going.
Yeah.
Which I can't blame him.
Too many people are too selfish.
Yeah.
I try always to throw some money. I mean, I'm not.
Yeah,
know,
no. They
there's no commas in any of those numbers, but I do throw some money at
20,
people.
20, 25 bucks. Right. You know, right. They're so appreciative, you know, and it's.
I there's a little to-do thing I use, and I threw the guy 25 bucks. He wasn't even asking for it. I found his website. He had his information in there, and I sent him some money. And he wrote back to me and said, what is this for? It's just appreciation for a really great program. And he was just thrilled. And about a month later, I had a question, a thing that I couldn't do in it. So I sent him a little note, and he wrote back and said, you're the guy who sent me money. I'll fix that immediately. Okay.
Well, that's the thing. There's another program we use, and the gentleman did an update, but he first sends it out to the folks that support him.
Sure.
You know, and worry about the other folks later because, you know, he gets, you know, well, do this and do that. He worries about the folks that are supporting him. He'll take their questions or the hints to do improvements to help us out. But the other folks that just like to complain, you know, it's like, yeah, no, don't hold your breath. And I can, you know, I go along with it. Because I know what it's like. I wrote some software a long time ago, and, you know, he got very little support. So there was no incentive to really keep it going.
Right.
If you're going to keep doing it and do it and get people to say, well, you know, it should be able to do this. And how about if it did that? And I felt like saying, how about helping me out a little bit and supporting me? But, you know, that's why we encourage folks, even though we recommend Super Anti-Spyware, Malware Bytes, and these other packages, they're free. Free to try out. If you really like them and use them, help support it. It's not that expensive.
The first guy who ever created user-supported software was a guy named Jim Knopf, known mostly as Jim Button, since apparently Knopf means button in German. And he created a program, a system called Buttonware. And the first program he released was PC File, which was a flat file database.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yep. And I sent him some money. I got a letter back, which I still have somewhere squirreled away. Excuse me, SQL'd away. Where he said, I never thought people would pay for this. It's great to see that it's happening. I may be the first person who ever paid for software. I don't know.
You might.
I don't know. But it was the, you know, optional payment model, the user supported, if you like it, send me some bucks model. Mm-hmm. And he made a real business. PC Right by Bob Wallace. He's the guy who coined the term shareware. And that was a word processor. I paid for that. I bought PC File, I bought PC Right. PC Talk, which was a communications program.
Mm-hmm.
That was Andrew Flugelman. I paid for that. Some pretty good stuff in those days. And again, you know, this is what, mid-80s. So I don't think I sent him more than 10 bucks.
Yeah. But still, it pays. As a matter of fact, I can cite one example. This one package I use is called Ham Radio Deluxe. And they keep, you know, coming out for the paid patrons of it with updates.
Right.
And one broke. And, you know, a lot of folks were ticked off. I says, well, wait a minute. I wrote them and I says, where's the button to where I could go back to the previous version? We don't have that. I go, you check around. Most software packages will at least display the previous version so that you can go back to until this is fixed. It was like 3 or 4 days later, I go back to their webpage. Underneath the main download is, here's a link to the previous version.
Yep.
Nice. Cool.
Yep. And you know, most of those programmers are quite willing to do that, to make those changes for people who have proved they appreciate the software.
And quite often for software like that, it's just the one guy doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
And maybe a partner.
Exactly. And doing it in evenings and weekends, and they'd like to make a business out of it. You know, help them out. Yep. Send them a few bucks. How is that a problem?
Side gig.
Side gig.
Don't we all have a couple of side gigs?
Only a couple? Slacker.
And if you can get paid for them, that's even better.
Exactly.
And there lies the challenge.
Nice.
Yeah. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Hey, first of all, thank you for all you guys do.
Thank you.
And I am a big fan of kicking in when you can.
Thank you.
I've been getting into more and more apps on my Android phone and trying them out and like it, don't like it, switch back and forth and find a way to send some money to the ones I like.
Good. Good for you. Doggone I'm not, right.
I am a member also. So,
yay.
I do have a couple of questions.
Yep.
Listening live on the app on my phone, WGMC app, and while I'm listening, I'm looking for something you'd mentioned alternative to .NET, and so I'm switched over. I'm searching for that, and all of a sudden the live feed drops out.
It depends on a couple of things. One is how powerful your phone is, and two is whatever software you're using. In the background, sometimes there's just you're doing too much,
and sometimes programs don't allow background processing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You may want to try the Jazz 901 website that has an audio stream on it. Then you can just open a new tab in your web browser.
And that
could work too. Use the Jazz website and click the Listen Live button. Then you have a web tab for the audio, and then you can go to other web tabs too. I remember we had this question a while ago, and I'm seeing if we ever came up with an answer. We think it was just the Jazz 901 app doesn't support background audio.
If you're not a paid member of YouTube, you can't listen to something and switch over to look for something. And
right.
as soon as you clock out, it drops it.
Right, but if you do it in the web browser, then it will work when you switch to another tab in your web browser.
Yeah, okay, but if I'm looking for an app like a notepad or something that I want to jot something down, I lose it altogether.
Right.
The second question, I will try that Jazz website. The second question is, I look to your soundbites.org frequently and all kinds of good information, and I can't tell you how good it was to make sure that I had backups, because that's the first thing that keeps popping up, and I don't have enough backups, and I'm going, yeah, you're right, so let me work on that.
Good.
And it saved me some work. So to all those that procrastinate. But I was looking for the comment section, and I've done it before.
All right, listen, we got to take a break, so hold on. Stay on the line, okay. And we'll come back to you, okay? Okay? Okay. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we're going back to Fred from Rochester, New York. Hey, Fred's still there?
Yep, I'm still here.
Excellent. Go ahead.
So I was looking for the button to leave a comment on Soundbites. I voted in the poll. And oh. I think that check here to vote is new.
Yeah.
Okay, that popped out. That popped out. I mean, that was good.
Good.
Leaving a comment is not easy for me to find. Maybe I'm just handicapped.
No, you're not. It's down on the right. You scroll down under fascinating stuff. You'll see the forums.
Recent topics. Ooh, beloved sponsors.
No, you're on the left. You want to be on the right.
Okay. On the right, it says fascinating stuff.
That's it. The first one there is the forums.
Okay, forums.
Click on the forums, and then you have a bunch of them. There's the show discussion, the poll discussion, and then topics for Windows and Mac and Linux and Android and iOS and Second Life and hardware and software and fun stuff. And you can pick any one of those, click on that, and you can leave a comment. Or, you know, under recent forum topics, you can answer somebody else's comments or whatever you want to do.
And I also checked the Jazz 91 app on my iPhone, and it does support background audio. So maybe your phone doesn't have enough power, or there's a setting. Is there a setting in Android somewhere to limit background apps?
And I don't know where I clicked, you know, as I was looking around at a bunch of different stuff, and then all of a sudden it went out. So it was originally, but it didn't when I kept surfing to other stuff. So it might be just a lame phone.
Could be.
And then to subscribe to your podcast, directions?
You would have to pick a podcasting app find it in the podcast directory.
Okay.
And then there's a subscribe button there. There are links to the to iTunes on our website, because that's the app I use. So that's the first thing you'd have to do is pick a podcasting app for your Android phone.
Okay. Now you do because of my work or whatever. Sometimes I miss the show and I catch it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And I watch the video, which is kind of fun. Especially to see what you guys are doing during a break. But I don't know how to do that. Are there apps for watching the visual program?
Well,
just YouTube.
Just YouTube. If you're interested in listening to podcasts, you've already got the Jazz 90.1 app. Down at the bottom of that is the Soundbites archives.
Right.
So you can listen to those there. They're those there.
The old shows.
Okay. So I'm not sure which one of those, I do have a podcast app, and I do have the WGMC app. I just have to see which one will hold up to my looking at other stuff while I'm listening.
There you go.
Right. Either one works. They both go to the same source. So that's not a big deal. If you hit the hamburger menu in the upper left corner, those three lines, it opens up a menu, and down at the bottom of the menu is the Soundbites, not the bottom, in the middle of the menu is the Soundbites podcast.
You can also get the podcasts on the Soundbites website and play it in a web tab as well.
Right.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got to try that yet. Okay, great. Well, thank you guys so much for your help.
Thank you. And we're glad you're having a good time, and we thank you for being a listener.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks. And for being a member. In many, many ways, that's kind of more important, and we'd like to stick around for a while. Don't forget, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And while you do that, we're going to go right back to the phones and talk to Rich from Irondequoit. What's up, Rich?
Hello, guys, and good afternoon. Just want to ask a question about Chrome Flex. I've been using it for about a month. You guys were talking earlier about Chrome or Chromebooks updating and things like that, and I haven't seen an update with this in a month. Like I said, I've been trying it out. I do have it on a thumb drive that I'd loaded off of the thumb drive and then run it on the computer that I'm using so I can either use Windows or use the Chrome-type stuff. Is it because I'm doing that I'm not showing updates or not getting updates?
No, it's still in early beta, so the best way to get updates is to do it by hand.
Okay, and, so re-download it, if you will?
No. All you need to do is to, it works like every other version of Chrome. So you go down to the lower right and click on the time there, and then that pops up the menu.
Okay.
And across the top, there's your picture and a couple of icons. One of those icons is a gear. That's the settings icon. And you click on that. And then a window will pop up, and on the left is a menu. The bottom choice on the menu is about Chrome OS. You click on that, and then the first thing that pops up on the right is what version you're running and a check for updates button.
Okay, I guess I haven't looked hard enough to see that, or I'm a lazy looker, like my wife says.
I'm sure your wife is always right, but we don't think of you as lazy.
We call it selective looking.
There you go.
Just like
go.
Selective hearing.
Yes, exactly.
I tend to also look manually, so I don't know that it's been updating automatically.
Okay, I had heard that, like you say, it's in beta, so they really haven't come out with a solid version yet, I guess, if you will.
Right. Yep. Still early days.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for that little bit of help. I appreciate it, and have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, for those of you who do not know, Chrome OS Flex is... how is that not...
She doesn't want you to tell anybody.
She doesn't want me to tell anybody. How is that? That's supposed to be do not disturb. All right, okay.
When River wants to tell you something, you listen.
That's exactly right. What was I saying? Oh, Chrome OS Flex. Chrome OS Flex is the Chrome operating system that you get on Chromebooks, only it's for regular laptops and computers. It works very much the same way. I won't say identically, but very, very much the same way. It is still an early beta. That's why it's not quite identical. But it runs great. It does, you know, it doesn't do, here it is again. Why is this not on Do Not Disturb? It's supposed to be on Do Not Disturb from noon to 2. I will now put it on Do Not Disturb manually so that no one bothers me.
But you want your attention.
Put it face down.
Yeah, that's my wife. So, yeah, I should be.
Actually, is your wife a VIP and passes Do Not Disturb?
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly what happens. That's what's going on there.
Well, you should be able to flip.
Doesn't she know you're on the air?
Yes.
So it's either really, really important or...
Put it upside
down. No, it's for later. She told me it would be for later.
Yeah.
Put it upside down. That she,
flip dish doesn't work for me, and I don't know
really?
Why. It's a Pixel phone. It should work.
Probably your VIPs are bypassing.
Yeah.
That must be it.
Yeah.
They take priority, which makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
You'd want it, you know, because if it's...
She and my daughter are the only two that can do that.
But that's what you'd want it that way, in case there was an emergency.
Right.
Or it just, in general purposes, if your wife calls.
Right. Anyway, before we get back to the phones, Chrome OS Flex, it is a version of Chrome. It runs on a number of different laptops. So if you're interested in reviving an old laptop that can't really run anything else at this point, that's a pretty good alternative. Certainly something that's absolutely free and can be played around with.
Yeah.
We'll go back to the phones. Our next caller is Art from Rochester, New York. Hi, Art. What's up?
Hi, Nick. I'm calling to follow up on a conversation you folks had last week about Facebook shadow profiles. You may recall that I think Steve brought it up.
Yeah.
I found that kind of disturbing since the way Facebook is gathering your data is totally out of your hands.
Right.
I'm a data person, and I run Pi-hole. We discussed this in the past, and it just collects. It's a DNS sinkhole. But it also occurred to me that they collect statistics. So after last week's program, I poked around in Pi-hole, and I found that over the past year, Facebook DNS lookups, I had 23,598 DNS lookups for Facebook
Yep.
Yep. Every single web page you go to has a Facebook icon on it. And so when that web page loads, that icon loads from Facebook and tells Facebook you went to that page.
Right.
So if you black hole it, or you know, with your pie hole, then Facebook doesn't know about you going to that page.
So that's what I've done. So for over a year, I've been avoiding Facebook as best I can.
Good.
And with Pi-hole, I think I've dug a moat around my house.
Pretty much.
Yep.
But they're still out there trying.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's what they do. For everybody else, what Pi-hole is a network protection system. You throw it on a Raspberry Pi. And it is basically, it becomes your DNS server and can block ads and all those sorts of things. It blocks in-app advertisements and, you can save statistics. It does all kinds of things. It basically becomes, you put it in at your router, and do that stuff. And it's got some very pretty,
things
that you can look at.
Powerful things. And Nick, so also I should indicate, following on the conversation in the first half hour, I also contribute to that Pi-hole development because it is an invaluable piece of software in my perspective.
Right.
And additionally, I'll conclude with, I'm also a member of WGNC, and the last I knew, they were still short meeting their goal for the fiscal year. So.
Yeah, it's sad. Very sad.
So I hope they can meet that goal.
All right, thank you. We do too. We'd like to stay on the air. It'd be very nice.
Thank you for your time.
All right, thanks. Yeah, it runs a DNS server in an audit log, long-term stats. You can create a blacklist. You can run a DHCP server. All kinds of things. Pi-hole is basically a replacement for your router, really. Well, no, not really, because it doesn't provide Wi-Fi or any of that stuff. It's a pretty good product. So it might not be it might be the kind of thing you want to look into if you've got an extra Raspberry Pi sitting around, because you can run it on pretty much anything, and do all kinds of stuff. So. We're going to go back to the phones right now, and we're going to talk to Kevin from Gates, New York. Hi, Kevin. What's up?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Peachy. How are you?
Good. Very good. I've got a couple questions. Number one, I'm on my desktop. I'm running Linux Mint 20. It's great. I haven't had to boot into Windows in over 2 years. Windows is dead to me.
Good. Good for you.
Yeah. My question is, in the update manager, it always nags me about Linux kernel updates. And looking online, I get kind of mixed messages if I should update the kernel or not.
Well, it depends on whether you're talking about updating the current kernel or updating to the next version of Linux Mint.
Okay, no, I'm staying on 20, but just every time I do an update, it says, there's a Linux kernel update. You know?
Right, so the kernel...
It's in with all the other one updates.
Right. The kernel is the heart of Linux. It is the base internals of the operating system. And if you want to be as secure as possible and as up-to-date as possible, you would update the kernel. I just updated mine this morning, in fact, on this machine. Did it on my home desktop a couple of days ago.
But that is a time when you're going to have to reboot the computer.
Right.
So make sure you do this when you're not in the middle of something else.
Right.
Sure.
Because the kernel is the only time you have to reboot. That is the heart of the operating system. It's the base of kind of everything else.
Okay. Yeah, because I've seen online some people are like, well, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I might bork something else.
Well, the problem is there is something broken in the kernel, and that's why there is an update.
Yeah, that's what the update does, is it fixes errors as well as adding features and protection.
So, okay, gotcha.
Generally speaking, particularly when it comes to Linux, by the time it gets to you, it's been thoroughly vetted.
Okay. All right. So I guess I'll update then. My other question is, I've got a Chromecast with Google TV that I use mainly just to cast local media from my NAS onto my TV. I use Kodi for that. Works great. My question is, since I'm signed in and it's a Google device, is Google able, are they scraping like my files on my NAS? Can they see what videos I'm watching and that kind of stuff on my NAS when
good,
I...
Good question. Thanks for asking it, Kevin. Bye-bye.
Uh-oh.
No, the answer is we don't believe that they are actually reaching into your drive to see what you're watching.
Okay.
But they may get a report that you have watched something.
Okay.
And if
the usage statistics that they get don't necessarily include
where,
what, but they include that you did. So,
okay.
You know, Kevin, whatever, how they don't obviously, they say that they disassociate your statistics from you. So they don't know that Kevin watched, you know, The Princess Bride.
Right.
What they know is that some user cast a movie.
Okay. Because I understand, like, if I'm watching stuff, I understand if I'm using other apps on the Chromecast, like Netflix, they know what I'm watching.
Exactly.
I'm just worried about my local files, you know.
No. What they say they can, well, of course, who knows? But what they say they do is they collect only usage statistics so that they can go back and say, oh, you know, 600 million people watched a movie that they cast. So maybe we should make sure that works well.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. One thing they do look at is any files you put on your Google Drive. There was a problem a couple of weeks ago in automatic copyright violation notices.
Yes.
Okay.
There's an invisible file that the Mac uses for part of its desktop management called ds_store for desktop storage. Someone apparently copyrighted a file that had this invisible thing in it and put it on the Google Drive. Every other Mac user that's uploaded something to Google Drive probably has the same file.
Got flagged.
Yeah.
And yeah, millions of takedown notices started going out for copyright violation.
That's funny.
Okay. I make sure. I mean, I don't know if it makes a difference, but like if I'm going to upload something to share with someone to my Google Drive, I'll just give it a generic file name. I don't know if that makes a difference or
it
not.
It helps.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, you've answered all my questions, so thanks a lot, guys. I love the show.
Thank you, Kevin.
All right.
Keep listening.
See you later. Will do. Bye bye.
What there was one cloud storage system that intentionally said it was going to look at all your content, and if two people uploaded the same file, they would only store one copy of it.
Right.
So it didn't take much room. So people started.
Google does that.
Yeah, people started uploading movies.
Right.
They'd rip a movie and upload it, and then Google only had to store one file.
Right. I think.
And then Google the content ID people came along and said, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, right. But it wasn't that they were looking at your file. They essentially ran a diff.
Yeah.
So if two files were programmatically identical, algorithmically identical, it saved one copy.
Yeah.
And that just saved storage space on their site. They didn't look at the file as such.
Yeah. Don't anthropomorphize computers.
Right.
They hate that.
They do. They hate it. Why? I just can't.
I can't get into Facebook this week, so you jinxed me. So we're live on YouTube, and on our Facebook page, I said go to the YouTube link. the YouTube login page comes as a linear text file and then won't log in because there's a processing error.
Yes, that's what I
get. Or I get a blank page with no error.
Oh, I don't get that. I get the linear page with no CSS and nothing else going on. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dave from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Dave?
Well, I have a Western Digital Passport 1 gig external USB drive that decided to stop allowing me to look at it. So I thought I'd run check disk on it, and it took forever and ever. And when I came back to the computer, I didn't walk away from that one. It rebooted before the check disk actually completed. So then I downloaded a program called DMDE to see if I go in and look at and or repair anything. And in the middle of it doing its thing, it rebooted the computer also.
It may be
no, what I think it is you say this is an external hard drive, right?
Yeah.
Probably it's the control unit that is controlling the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Those mechanisms do wear out.
It's surprising because Western Digital makes really, really good hard drives.
Yeah.
But their external
casings,
especially the My Passport and the My Book, seem to be crap.
Yeah.
Is this a 2.5-inch drive or 3.5-inch?
It's a USB drive. It's external. And it's probably 3.5 wide.
Yeah, because sometimes you can remove the drive from the enclosure and still get access to all the data. But we have started seeing, so typically it's a SATA drive with a USB adapter on it,
yep.
Especially on the 3.5-inch drives.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But we've started seeing that Western Digital is putting the USB interface directly on the hard drive controller. So taking it out of the chassis doesn't help any because it's still the same USB connection.
Yeah, it's older. It's been around a while. Yeah, the other thing is when it's plugged in, it slows the computer way, way down, and as soon as I unplug it,
it goes back up. Yeah,
because that sounds like it is.
Yeah,
the USB
it's a control
interface.
Unit is slowing it down because it's trying to check to because it knows it's there because you plugged it in. The USB
right.
knows
and it's trying to read it.
And it's trying to read it just to know, so in case you click on it, it knows the information, and it keeps failing because the controller is shot.
So you can try taking the drive out of the chassis and see if you can put it into a different chassis, if that works. Otherwise, you've got a backup of that data, right?
Well, I don't. I have a partial backup, and it's not my critical data. It's one of I'll get to it kind of things. And.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not, if it could be moved to a different controller, is there somebody that could do that if I can't do that myself?
Well, there's, matter of fact, on Amazon, you can buy devices.
Yeah, but getting it out of the enclosure and putting it into another one can be tricky if you're not used to tinkering. Most of the PC shops, including mine, can do something like that.
Okay, maybe I'll swing by one of these days. It's not real hot priority, but if anything, I'd like to just see the directory tree so I know what it is that's in there.
I had a unit go, and on Amazon.
On Amazon, you can get a replacement enclosure.
No, it's not even an enclosure. All it is a cable, and it plugs into the 3.5-inch drive and goes into the USB port. And it'll boot right on
SATA
up.
To USB connector. Yep. I've got one. It was, $35.
But you still have to get the drive out of the enclosure.
You got to get the drive out of there and don't damage it.
You can try searching on YouTube, and you'll find ways to open up the drive enclosure.
Okay. Yeah.
Make sure you search that exact model drive, because they're all a little different.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. All right. That music tells us that we are done for the first hour, but do not despair. There's an entire another hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. A whole another hour of sound bites with a whole another hour of Dave Enright, a whole another hour of Steve Ray, and a whole another hour of Nick Francesco, but most importantly, a whole another hour of you. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And we will talk to you about computers or dang near many other things. But we're going to take a slightly longer break, take a good bio break, but come on back for a whole nother hour of sound bites on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District and official media partner of this year's CGI Rochester International Jazz Festival, Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Well, the streak of good news for gamers in need of new gaming PC continues as the price of graphic cards keeps on falling. The latest report about GPU pricing shows large drops for both AMD and NVIDIA graphics cards. This is the first time that some of the best graphics cards from the latest generations can be found not just at MSRP, manufacturer suggested retail price, but under it, marking a shift in the market that we haven't seen in a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
Both AMD and NVIDIA GPUs are consistently dropping in price. This month marks the first. It marks a first since the release of the latest AMD Radeon RX and NVIDIA GeForce GPUs that the cards are near even below their intended MSRP. The average price of an AMD graphics card has dropped 8% below MSRP. 8% below MSRP.
Well, it's NVIDIA's been, what, 10 or 20% above MSRP
exactly.
for a while?
Yeah. NVIDIA is still not quite there yet, but those prices have also dropped considerably. As it stands now, the average NVIDIA GPU is around 2% more expensive than MSRP. However, there's a lot of variation across the board. Some of the more affordable GPUs are still seeing the worst price inflation, while the high-end models are closer to MSRP. It's not just graphics card prices that are improving. The same can be said about DDR5 and DDR4 DRAM. According to TrendForce, the prices of DRAM should drop up to about 8% due to inflation and the Russian invasion of Ukraine. These factors contribute to a lower demand and as a result, a decline in pricing. The downward trend is indicative of a price drop that's seen globally. Prices may vary between markets, and exchange rates may also play a part, but in general, things are certainly improving, and what a massive improvement it has been. What contributed to such a large price drop? After all, going from over 300%. To MSRP is certainly a massive difference. There are a few factors that play into it. For one, the cryptocurrency market is currently in shambles, and that makes GPUs much less desirable for crypto mining. There comes a point where you have to begin to admit that you're spending more on electricity than you're making in crypto mining.
You got to get into that if you've got nothing better to do.
It's a hobby, and if you're willing to spend money, that's
yeah,
a good
and money.
Like any other hobby.
Right.
That is a deep, dark hole.
Right.
And just keep pouring the money into it and not worry about getting something back out and get upset. Then
right.
You're fine.
Right. We're also finally starting to see the results of various supply chain improvements both NVIDIA and AMD have made over the past couple of years to combat the increased demand for graphics cards. Not too long ago, finding a GPU in stock used to be next to impossible, but now you can reasonably find all kinds of GPUs for sale. A larger supply combined with lower demand both add up to a considerable price drop. Both AMD and NVIDIA are soon set to release the next generation of graphics cards, with AMD's RDNA 3 and NVIDIA's RTX 4000 set to release this year. We might continue to see the pricing of RDNA 2 and RTX 3000 drop. So are you ready for that hot new graphics card? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
That's one thing, though, that gamers are pretty savvy on, whereas other folks, you know, they try to skimp, you know, either on memory or the graphics card. They'll default to, just use the onboard graphics, and then they wonder why the machine isn't
there. Or worse, they don't even think of it, and they just buy the $300 computer.
Right.
That doesn't have enough memory. It's a really slow processor. Doesn't have enough storage.
Celeron.
And it's got a crappy video card.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
If you're typing in Notepad, it's going to be fine.
Right.
Yeah, and especially if it's onboard graphics. Right. Because all that memory that you had installed on it, say you even went from 8 to 16 gig. You know, I mean, half of that's going now to the graphics card.
Again, as Steve said, it depends on what you do. Everything is graphical nowadays, so it's going to slow down to some extent. But if you don't turn on any of the fancy-dancy stuff, you know, zooming windows and all that other nonsense, you'll be okay. But if
not you're, for role playing. Yeah.
Right. If you're going to play games or anything like that, you really need a much more high-end machine. If the extent of your gaming is solitaire, you'll be fine. But other than that, not so much. And even then, nowadays, you go to, you know, you want to watch YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
That you're probably not going to have a great experience on a low end machine.
Even playing multiplayer solitaire.
Right.
Yeah, or you know, Euchre, Hearts, you know, some of these multiplayer games, you're playing against people over the internet, and so that needs a little better processor, a little, you know, the network port, internet connectivity, so even that can be a little slow.
And if you're going to be doing a lot of Zoom meetings, which people still are,
yep.
Any sort of video chat meeting, you're going to want a machine that's a little more than the baseline. It's just the way it is. So... be prepared if you're looking to get a new machine to at least move up one step. Think about more RAM. Think about a faster processor. Think about a better graphics card. Think about more memory. I already said that. And think about a faster hard drive or a bigger hard drive. One of the things really that you want to pay attention to these days is if it's an SSD card. Those will be very fast, but typically not very big.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can buy a terabyte drive that's 5,400 RPM and it's going to be slow, but you've got a lot of storage. Or you can get an SSD card that's super fast, but probably only 256 or 128 gig.
At the same price.
At the same price.
That's what's tricky.
So what a lot of people are doing now is buying two drives. One 128 or 256 gig drive to be their boot drive, where you load programs, you load the operating system.
Just the operating system.
That needs to be fast. Then you buy a terabyte hard drive, which is a spinning drive and is slow, but you don't care because all you're doing is loading and saving data to it, pictures and songs and all that other stuff. And it's plenty fast enough for that, so you wait an extra third of a second for that. Who cares?
One thing, though, folks don't realize, you know, and doing that is the ideal way to do it. But what a lot of folks don't realize is when you go to install software, if you have, like Nick said, a second drive, you can elect to put it in a subdirectory on, say, it's the D drive. You can tell it, no, don't do it on the C drive. Change that C to a D and have it loaded onto the D drive. So all the programs and all that other stuff is on there. Just your processor and the operating system is on the main fast drive.
Even if you put the programs there, look inside the program to see where it saves its data. You can usually change that to somewhere else as well. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. What's up, Larry?
Good afternoon, guys.
How are you?
I'm fine, and you?
Good. Peachy, in fact.
Good. I think, might be a Steve question, but this could be a general question. Every now and then, my new Mac will begin when it's in sleep mode, usually at night around the time when I have it backing up to iDrive. It'll, in about 2 minute intervals, the screen will come on, stay on 30 seconds or so, and then it will go off. And then it'll come on again about 2 minutes later, stay on 30 seconds, and go off. Sometimes it can do that for a couple hours, and I don't know if there's something in iDrive that's causing that to happen. I can't figure it out, and so what I do is I get mad, and I just shut the machine down.
Yeah.
Is that a week on LAN?
Yeah, so one way to test it is to disable iDrive for a night or two and see if that's what happens. But it's probably something called Wake on LAN, which wakes your computer up when it gets a network connection, which sounds like what it's happening. So when you're backing up to iDrive over the internet, it's got to wake the computer up.
Oh, and excuse me, it's not iDrive. It's actually, yeah, it is iDrive. I'm sorry. It's iDrive. And again, it doesn't happen all the time. It's just every now and then I'll notice that for some strange reason the screen will come on just a, you know, a few seconds cut off. But I timed it a couple of nights ago, and it was roughly in 2 minute intervals.
So that sounds like it, the screen is waking up and then going back to sleep again when it's idle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what WakeOnLAN was originally designed for was servers. So if it got a request and it was asleep, it would wake up and handle that request. That's the point. A lot of people don't realize it's running on their desktops as well. And most operating systems will let you turn that off. I don't know where you turn it off on a Mac, but you should be able to turn it off.
It's either an energy saver or it's in in the network settings.
Right, one of the two.
Yeah.
Again, that was, you know, originally designed. Let's say your machine needs to grab some data at 2 a.m. That's coming in, and it would then wake up and grab those data. Great. That's great. But if you don't do that, if you don't need it to do that, you don't need the machine to wake on LAN.
There is a setting in the Mac called Power Nap. So when it's asleep, it will still do your backup. It will still check for your mail and still do things like that. So when you do get back to it, everything is up to date and all your new mail is waiting there.
Okay, now I'm looking at energy saver.
Yeah.
Light bulb, and of course it's got power, and then it's got a schedule here. Of course, I'd have to click on it and open it up so I could get in and change things, but, huh. All right, yeah, well, let me fool around in there and see what I can find. Prevent your Mac automatically sleeping when display is off. Okay, so I'm going to have to tool around in here.
Yeah, it could also say wait for network access.
Okay, I do see a startup or wake, but I haven't clicked that. Okay. It looks like I'm going to have to take your advice and tool around in here and see what I can find, because it doesn't do it often, but when it does, it can become annoying.
I don't doubt that.
Oh, okay. Well, you've given me more information than I had. I'll start tooling around in here and see what I can find. But I really will take a look at this Wake on LAN.
Perfect.
Yep.
And see what it does. All right. Well, as usual, you guys give me a starting point.
Well, thanks, Larry. Have fun.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I just got a new USB charging cable, and it's got a little blue light on it to let you know it's on. That little blue light is really bright in my dark bedroom at night.
No. Yep. I have power to several USB connectors for recharging, and they have a green light that I swear to you is designed to signal satellites.
Yeah.
It's ludicrously bright.
There it is. So Apple menu system preferences, battery, power adapter, wake for network access.
There it is. So, Larry, I'm sure you're still listening. Say it again, Steve.
Apple menu system preferences, battery, power adapter, wake for network access.
There you go.
And I'll post a link, too.
Yeah. And then, theoretically, if you turn that off, network access will not wake the computer.
Right.
What I found was, you know, I always like at least a nightlight in the bathroom. So when you go wandering in there, you know, and it was like, you know, there's only two outlets in there. And I hated that, you know, if you're using those for other things, trying to put a nightlight in there. So I happened to find an outlet that in the middle has LED nightlight.
I've started seeing those.
So at nighttime, it's got a sensor that once it starts getting dark, it turns on that LED, and as it gets darker, it gets brighter.
Nice.
And by the middle of the night, you go in there, and it's like, well, this is pretty bright.
We've had the same nightlight in the bathroom since my daughter was, well, a baby, and it hasn't burned out yet. That's so weird. But now we also have a Google Home in the bathroom that has time and the temperature on it, and that's pretty bright too. So
yeah,
when you go in at night, there it is. And of course, I live in the city, so it's never actually dark anywhere.
I always run the risk of stepping on a cat.
Yeah,
they're usually on the bed, but sometimes they're right in the pathway to the bathroom.
Yeah, cat owners like ourselves learn to shuffle rather than walk.
Our dogs. One of them likes going, if it's super hot in the house, they'll go into the bathroom and sleep up by the toilet because it's so much colder.
Yep.
My one Westie, if she wasn't in the bedroom, I knew where she was because I go in the bathroom. She was on the far side, so you wouldn't step on her.
Right.
She learned to go on the far side, just lay up against that. It's cold porcelain. Yep. It was cooler for her.
Yep, exactly. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. What's up, Mark?
Hi, guys. Speaking of the light, the bright LEDs,
you
can go on Amazon and get what are called blackout stickers.
Oh, yeah.
What they do is they take that brightness and they knock it down, so it's still lit, but...
Electrical tape, if you want to really black it up.
Yeah, then you can't see it at all, but if you want to be able to see it without it illuminating the whole room. I've got one on my computer I had built, and that LED is so darn bright that if you look at it, you get spots in your eyes.
Yeah.
That's how bright it is. So they're neat little stickers. You can stick it. Of course, they're only going to work on things that are, round LEDs and stuff like that. I think they do make square and stuff like that too, but they work great.
Great, thank you.
So, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Thanks.
Have a good one.
You too.
Yep.
Amazon blackout stickers. Good to know.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Mm-hmm.
The
interesting.
Haven't needed those since the war.
Yes. There's all kinds of little things that I just found a stick-on camera cover for a phone. You put it, you stick it right to either the glass or the protective coating you've got over the glass, and it's got a little door, the little door that opens and closes.
Yep.
So it's a privacy screen for your phone.
There's a lot of those for laptops too.
Right.
The problem is most laptops have such tight tolerance that when the lid closes, that little screen is making
enough to not close it down.
Right, and it makes it rock. And then when you pick your computer up by one hand, you break the glass or the LCD
Ouch.
Panel.
Ouch.
In fact, when we're doing a display replacement with Apple, one of the questions they ask us is, was the customer using some sort of camera cover that might have caused it to break the glass? And tell them not to do that anymore.
Yeah, right.
Hmm.
Of course, we always wonder why didn't put a camera cover to begin with. And the cameras used to have covers.
Yeah, they used to have a little sliding.
And I want to know how many millions of tech support calls I got about my camera doesn't work.
Right.
Step one, have you opened the cover? Oh, okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's just a little door.
So then they
slide
putting,
open
yeah.
or close. It was... People How much could it have cost them to install something?
It wasn't the cost of the cover. It was the cost of tech support answering questions about why isn't my camera working.
Right.
And so they took the covers off, put the green light on. Theoretically, the green light can't light up unless the camera's on because it's in series with the camera power.
Right. That's right up there with, the ad they used to have and the girls holding a mouse. And saying, what's wrong with this picture? She's got the mouse upside down rolling the ball.
Right.
It's like.
Or the foot pedal.
Yeah.
Right. The big foot pedal. Yep. The thing is we see it all the time. I mean, we say to somebody, well, if you just go here, and here, it's people just don't know. They just it none of this is as intuitive as we tend to think it is.
You're one of today's 10,000.
My 10,000 what? Yeah.
The people that learn something new. 10,000 on average, 10,000 people a day learn something for the first time.
Yep. That's exactly
You've
right.
You've never heard of Mentos and Coke? Oh, wow. I got to show you this.
Yeah, exactly. The fact is that computers are not nearly as intuitive as we like to pretend they are. You may not remember, but back in the day, we used to say all the time to people who had just gotten a computer, everybody from the secretaries to the executives, go ahead and play solitaire. Because it'll teach you to use a mouse.
Yep.
You'll get used to using a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
Because they aren't intuitive. And when trackpads came along, there are still people who hate trackpads because they're used to mice now. They're not used to trackpads.
Yep.
And it's a very different thing. And then the people who like rollerballs.
Yep.
And
Apple has done something that I think is stupid because I've been using Macs for 30 years. The trackpad, a couple years ago, they introduced a feature called Force Click. So you push, you push it a little bit, and it's a regular click. You push it harder, and it's a force click.
It's rougher on the pad, too.
Well, so what that means is you push the pad a little bit, and one thing happens that you're expecting. You push it harder, something else happens that you're not expecting.
Right.
So people are always complaining about, why isn't my trackpad working right? Well, you're pushing it too hard. So right. Most of the time we turn that feature off. If you know about it and want to use it, that's fine. But those of us that have been, especially the olden days when you had to push really hard on a mechanical trackpad. It's just such an annoying feature that you push it a little bit and one thing happens. You push it harder, something else happens.
Well, I used to see it when folks had I think it was IBM, even HP there. They had the trackpad, and then just below that were the left and right mouse buttons.
Yep.
And people would break those constantly.
Yep.
Because they were pushing them too hard, and there was springs in there, and you didn't have to be brutal with it, but they were. And constantly you had to say, well, that's shot. Get yourself a regular USB mouse and hook it up.
And since a lot of people are right-handed, the right mouse button is what you will hit with your thumb. But right. That's right-click, not left-click.
Right.
Although, interestingly enough, some computer companies are now saying primary click and secondary click because we don't want to be handist.
Right. And also, many times now you can change the orientation of the arrow, which is a right-handed arrow, to a left-handed arrow if you want to.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. They're getting a little better at that.
Well, now see, that's one difference between Mac and Windows is on the Mac, it points up to the left. So when Microsoft copied it, they made it go up to the right.
Yeah. Well, mine goes up to the left, but you can reverse that. You can pick a different thing.
Yeah.
And then one of the other things you can do, of course, on many computers is you can put a little circle around the cursor, particularly if you're on a laptop that's got a busy screen, finding your arrow is difficult.
Apple has a feature that if you shake your mouse, the cursor gets really big.
Yeah.
Because that's what people usually do when they can't find their cursor. They'll shake their mouse. So they do that with mice and trackpads. So you shake your mouse.
How do you get that circle, though?
It's part of the mouse thing.
Oh, is it? Yeah. I've seen it. I've seen a lot of folks use the feature.
I forget what they call it.
I just turned it to extra large.
Yeah.
Right.
That way my eyes, I can follow it around a little bit easier.
I don't think I have it on this one, but you can do a bunch of different
highlighting and that type of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll have to look into it.
Yeah, not every mouse driver has it, but it is a thing that is.
Well, it's worth looking into. You know, and
there's some third-party programs, too, that can do it, I'm finding.
Right. Certainly Chromebooks have it. I know this because it's working on one of my. I don't remember turning it on, but it is, and that's fine. But there's all kinds, and of course you can change your change your cursors as well. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
There's supposed to be somebody else speaking.
I know. And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Well, I got a couple of stories left here. Which one would be more interesting, I think, to people?
Yeah, quite a few good ones out there here this week.
I like this is the one that...
The Alexa one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, Alaska.
Yeah. In this news story, we will be replacing the name of Amazon's voice assistant with the word Alaska so that your devices don't start going off randomly.
I think that'd be
as
fun
Steve
anyway.
Already did. You're welcome. At Amazon's ReMars conference, Alaska's senior vice president Rohit Prasal exhibited a startling new voice assistant capability. The supposed ability to mimic voices. So far, there's no timeline whatsoever as to when or if this feature will be released to the public. Stranger still, Amazon framed this copycatting ability as a way to commemorate lost loved ones. It played a demonstration video in which Alaska read to a child in the voice of his recently deceased grandmother. You heard that correctly? And I read that correctly. Prasad stressed that the company was seeking ways to make AI as personal as possible. While AI can't eliminate that pain of loss, he said, it can definitely make the memories last. An Amazon spokesrobot said that the new skill can create a synthetic voice print after being trained on as little as a minute of audio of the individual it's supposed to be replicating. Security experts have long held concerns that deepfake audio tools, which use text-to-speech technology to create synthetic voices, would pave the way for a flood of new scams. Voice cloning software has enabled a number of crimes, such as a 2020 incident in the United Arab Emirates, where fraudsters fooled a bank manager into transferring $35 million after they impersonated a company director. Now, that's a worthwhile use of the technology. But deepfake audio crimes are still relatively unusual, and the tools available to scammers are, for now, relatively primitive. And then along comes Amazon. So, are you ready to listen to your dead relatives tell you the temperature? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
It's been a common science fiction trope for years about uploading your consciousness into a computer or into a new body when you die. The NCIS LA last season had a big... subplot on deepfakes where they were deepfaking one of the agents. And so Gerald McRaney is now the grizzled old admiral running the place. And the bad guys deepfake a bunch of love messages from Callan to the admiral on his... Gerald McRaney?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I would think that would be like a double-edged sword. It's good... But it'd also be kind of eerie.
Ghoulish, I would say.
Yeah, hearing that person's voice.
Yeah.
I mean, I love, remembering my loved ones that I've left.
Right.
And my thoughts of that. But to hear them here and there, reading or something like that, that would be...
The lady from whom we bought our house. I knew her son before he passed and then, blah, blah, blah. But... She called me up one time when she was still living in the house, frantic, you must come immediately. Okay, what's the problem? I'm hearing my dead husband's voice. Well, we're in the shadow of Pinnacle Hill, and she had an organ, a small, I don't know, spinet organ, I don't know what they call the small organs, but it's an organ, and somehow it was picking up one of the radio stations. And her husband had done ads for the station. So she was indeed hearing her husband's voice coming from her living room.
Wow.
It was a little eerie.
You are now entering the Twilight Zone.
Yeah. Imagine if you're one of Susan Bennett's friends, the original voice of Siri.
Exactly.
And hearing her voice coming out of your phone all the time. I'd probably change it real quick.
I'd change it real quick. Did I tell you that she follows me on Twitter?
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't know why. I have no idea why, but she does.
She's doing those new commercials where, hi, I'm Susan Bennett, the original voice of Siri. And
yeah.
I can't remember what it's a commercial for, so it's a bad commercial.
It's not a good commercial. That's
right. But you at least remember that.
That's one thing I've noticed on TV. There has been some commercials that I sit there and see, and then I go, what the heck were they advertising?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they make no sense of what product or message they're trying to convey.
Yeah, right. I don't. I rarely watch live.
I hate to lately anymore because
I record everything.
And when I am watching it live, and I hit that fast forward button, and it doesn't work, I'm so mad.
So annoying.
Somebody's got to fix that. Yeah, fast forward live commercials.
The best one though is I sit there and I have to laugh. I just find it humorous. They sit there and put these drug ads on,
right?
And they spend, you know, say it's a 1 hour, 1 minute commercial. They spend 30 seconds telling you all the side effects. Yep.
And don't take it if you're allergic to it.
And you might
die. Or
you might, it might cause death.
Yeah. Well, somewhere.
I don't know if I have any sort of disease that I'm not, and that most of them are not diseases as such.
Yeah.
They're annoyances. Yes, I understand that if you have it, it's a horrible thing. But compared to dying, I think it's not so bad.
Yeah. Or sometimes you don't know it's a gender-specific drug.
Right.
You ask her, should I take this drug? No, that's for having period cramps. You don't need that, sir.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, again, they sit there and they go on and on and on and on. And like, well, I'll live with what I got.
Because you know somebody took that drug when they shouldn't have, and now the lawyers got involved, and they have to have all those disclaimers.
Right.
Well, it's just like that one for heartburn. That was out there for the longest time, and now they had to take it off the market because it was causing all kinds of ulcers and cancer.
Yeah, well, but it cured the heartburn.
Cured them too.
My doctor once said, I'd like you to try this drug, but it doubles your risk of heart attack. Well, I'm not stupid. So I said, what's my current risk of heart attack? He said, well, a little less than 1%. Okay, so this stuff is going to make my risk of heart attack a little less than 2%. I think I can live with that. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, if it was 30%.
98% of the time you'll live with it.
Right. 100%. 98% of the time I'll live with it 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like when I had my first stent put in, they put me on blood thinners. And the doctor told me, well, you only got to be on it 6 months. Because when you're on those things, man, you could get a small cut and it looks like you severed a whole hand. So I go back in there and my regular doctor says, well, you can come off it. And the other doctor said, well, no, I'd like to see him stay on it for a while because we're doing a clinical study. I go, no, you're going to pay me to be a part of that study?
Right.
I says, I get cuts in that and it looks like I'm severed something.
You cannot put your hands inside a computer without getting cut.
Yeah.
You cannot do it.
And I turned to the doctor. I said, like you, I says, do I really have to still be on? He goes, by my point, no. I said, then fine. I'm off of it. Take it off my list. I'm not doing it.
Right.
If I need something else down the road, fine. I'll do it. But I'm not going to take medicines to sit there and be some guinea pig for some study. Heck no. You pay me.
Right. Right. If you're not going to pay me, you're not going to get me.
Yeah.
That's easy. That's how that works. But yeah, those commercials, and they, you know, they go and find somebody who can speak fast.
Oh yeah.
And then they speed them up. Mm-hmm. Audacity has a changed tempo, which will change the speed at which you speak without changing the pitch. You know, normally when you talk faster, you get.
Yep.
But this doesn't change. You know, you talk faster, but it doesn't change the tempo. It doesn't change the pitch. And so I can see them recording a guy talking as fast as he can and then speeding it up just to the edge of not legibility because you're not reading it. Just to the point where you can hear it.
There's a famous app that's been around forever on the Mac called the Amazing Slowdowner. So you can slow down audio files.
Bob Heil from Heil Sounds.
Yep.
He goes into this whole YouTube video of sound, and how, you know, like as we get older, he says, once you get older in your 50s and all that, you know, you cranking up the TV or, you know, sometimes the sounds don't all come in. Well, he came up with this parametric audio device, and you get the device along with this large speaker that you could hook up to your TV, because there's where I have a lot of trouble sometimes is hearing things on TV. And this parametric device, sound device, you can adjust it, and they walk you through on how does that. And all of a sudden, because of the pitch in that of the sound, they change the level. So it brings it up to your failing hearing, so that it's like your hearing was back when you were 20s and your 30s.
It's one of the reasons why commercials on TV sound louder than the program.
Yep.
They're technically not any higher decibels, but they're clearer and directed at the audience rather than just dialogue on the screen. So there actually is a law that commercials can't be much louder than the High LPR 40 is kind of the quintessential dynamic microphone for podcasters.
Right. The other thing is you look at an old movie, you can understand everything everybody's saying.
Mm-hmm.
You watch a new movie, and half the time you can't understand it because they mixed it badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The audio for the explosions and whatever are apparently much more important than the actual dialogue.
Hearing the sound, yeah.
Also, of course, so many actors nowadays are mumble mouths. Compared to, you know, back in the day, they took
enunciated
lessons.
But that's the thing, though. You can go back to a movie and say, oh, I didn't hear that before.
Because they were mostly theater people before movies, so they were used to projecting to the back of the auditorium.
Right. Now that people talk like this, and you're supposed to...
I have to keep changing the audio settings on my soundbar. That if we're listening to, like, a concert, then I can go into the big concert sound. But when it's just a regular movie, then it stretches the audio side to side, and you can't understand. So we have to go back to center sound for regular television.
Right.
Like I say, that parametric device is so cool. It brought up, you know, because like you, I wear hearing aids and, you know, hearing goes, and just to be able to hear things clearer because it's bringing up the bass and the other tones and that.
The guy's name is Bob Heil?
Yeah, Bob Heil. Heil's site.
It's heilhamradio.com. I'm loading it up now.
Yeah. He works with so many rock groups that he went on tour with a lot of them. He's a professional organist. He plays organ around the world. They hire him, have him come to different things and do events. But he has worked with some big-name bands developing back in the days, like the 70s and the 80s. Sound systems.
So he knows John Anderson?
Yeah.
Do we need more keyboards? Yes. Yes, you do.
But he is the big person to go to for sound. And he got into ham radio when he was a kid and also has helped with that. I mean, I bought one of his mics for one of my radios, and the clarity is so much better. And getting out and everything else, it made a difference. And he, like I say, he gets in there and makes recommendations.
Oh, no, Rick Wakeman, that's who it was. Rick Wakeman, the keyboardist from Yes. He's got, if you ever see him doing live, he's got 1,000 keyboards around him.
Yep.
And he wears a cape.
I'm trying to think of the other. There's another famous rock artist, rock and roll guy that... is into ham radio too, and Bob Heil and him have worked together for a number of years and that. But like I say, it goes on and on. You can look him up, Bob Heil and Heil Sound Systems, and learn a lot. I mean, if you think, like, if you're getting up there in years, look at some of his one system to maybe make hearing TV a little bit better for you instead of cranking it up higher and still getting it distorted.
Right, right, right. So there's I have hearing aids now. And they don't they aren't bad. They aren't bad.
But they can't. He describes how there's a certain area in the sound spectrum that is perfect for, you know, if you were, say, between your 20s and 30s, that, you know, you hear everything, you know, like a parent, you know, they get, oh, I heard that, even though it's coming from the back of their, you know, the sure. room or something else. You're, so he tries to teach you how to use systems and bring it up within that range, because there is a set range. And within, get you into that range, you can hear a lot better.
Nice. Yeah. I'll definitely look into that.
Yeah, it's a cool system. But, you know, again.
Theoretically, one of those boxes down there is doing it for the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, right. Well, but the question is not, do they do that, but
how well they do it. Yes, because right. that's the thing. They can say
some
they,
of the mixing is just not good.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's garbage. I mean, they're cheap boxes, and they really don't filter it out or bring it to a level. Some folks, what we're talking about is you might see, like, equalizers, and, you know, most people would sit there and say, huh? Because they see all these buttons, a whole row of them going across, say, a 12-inch span, and they got all these sliders that go up and down, and you're supposed to form the wave to, you know, get it to sound good for you. And most people aren't engineers and not going to do it. Well, his system takes it down to just a few knobs, and they walk you through on how to set it so sounds sound better. And you can hook it up to your TV or other devices to make the sound sound better, and especially your computer. If you're doing a lot of go-to meetings and you might not understand all the folks, you will on this.
Right. And that's, of course, the other thing with that is we've all been using Zoom for so long or other video chat systems. And what we still haven't seemed to master is good lighting.
Yeah.
We see so many people who are in the dark and are, you know, the minute they turn their heads a little bit, you know, suddenly they're talking and you can't hear anything that they're saying, and then they move back.
And you'd think the brightness from the screen would light them up, but it doesn't enough.
Doesn't enough, no. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Hiya, James. What's up?
Yes, hello. Great show as always.
Thanks.
My friend is going to be getting hearing aids, his first set ever, and he can hear like halfway. Is there anything that hooks directly into his laptop through the aids that you would recommend?
In terms of the laptop, no, but with some hearing aids,
okay,
and it depends on the model and it depends on your phone, you can hook it to your phone so that you could receive phone calls through the hearing aids or play music through the hearing aids from your phone.
You'd think they'd just make them Bluetooth. Then they can hook to anything.
Right.
But no, you got to download their app.
Right.
So everyone is a little bit different, right?
Everyone's a little bit different. So you want to be careful. For example, my hearing aids will connect to an iPhone. Mm-hmm. They will not connect to an Android phone. Why? Because they have the same exact Bluetooth chip in them? I don't know.
Yeah, probably.
I don't know. But they don't. So you want to make sure you ask your friend ask careful questions before they get their hearing aids.
Oticon is one of the. There's like two major companies selling these, and if you get the wrong one for your device, then there's very little way around it.
Right.
So he needs to ask a lot of questions.
A lot of questions.
Yeah, it looks like Oticon is one, and ReSound is the other.
Yeah, because you also got to watch it. You know, there's hearing aids and hearing amplifiers.
Right.
And those are two different things.
Yeah, right now there are apps you can get on your phone where, like, it turns your phone into a microphone, and you set that next to the person you're talking with, and it plays the audio through the earbuds you have on. So you're basically holding a microphone up to the person you're talking with.
I'm going to tell him when he goes, I'm going to go with him. He needs to ask many, many questions, asking them and letting them know what he's interested in.
And he might want to do some shopping around. You know, I mean, there's many different brands out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just because, you know, he happens to hit this one company, like anything else, get a second opinion. Go to another place and see what they got to offer. You can shop around for hearing aids. You can go one place and get your test, And just like your eye doctor, you get a prescription that tells, you know, what you need as far as your audio and hearing, and you can go shopping around for hearing aids.
And I know some of them are very, very expensive. I know there's a big price range, too.
Oh, yeah. Most hearing aids, right, decent ones, are anywhere from $15 to $2,000 a piece.
Yeah, that's what he figured. He's looking at around $2,000, he was saying.
For one.
For what do you mean, for one?
You got two ears. Each one is like $12,000 to $2,000.
Oh, that they don't go by this, of course. Yeah, two ears, so one plus one.
Yeah. So if you buy a set, you're looking at about $4,000.
Or you just stick with one ear for now and get another. Didn't you say when you got yours they happened to be on sale? Buy one, get one half off or something.
Yeah, I went to get them and the lady told me the price and it was approximately twice what I was hoping to spend.
Yeah.
And she said, but you're lucky because you're an AARP customer, a person, and right now there's a sale, two for the price of one.
And, of course, the two ears may be different, obviously.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. But, yeah, AARP guaranteed. Paid for half of them. I paid for half of them. That was fair.
Yeah, they detect all that at his test, right?
They do that for you.
They do. They'll measure. You got to go into a sound booth, and they sit there and test both ears to what pitches and all that, and they draw this curve so they know how to set them up.
Well, thank you so much. I will advise them. I appreciate the information.
Yep. All right. Thanks, James.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think that, you know, a wireless Bluetooth headset can be, you know, $50 a pair, but your hearing aids are, you know.
Yeah.
1,000 times that.
There was a program. The reason I decided I wanted hearing aids was, A, I couldn't hear anybody say anything. But I went to a meeting, and there was an app for my phone that only worked with wired headsets. Okay. But it amplified everything for you. So I tried it, and I could hear suddenly everything everybody was saying at the other end of the table and everything. It was great. It's great. So the next day I called and made an appointment to get my ears checked.
My wife and I are always yelling at each other because we didn't hear what the other one said.
Right.
So she went to get a hearing test, and her hearing is actually exceptional for her age. And the doctor, I was in the doctor's side while he was doing the test. He said, "Boy, you can't get away with anything, can you?"
Yeah.
So now I know she's intentionally ignoring me.
There
she's
you go.
It isn't that she's not hearing me. She's ignoring me.
No, like we said at the beginning of the show, it's called selective hearing.
Yeah.
Right.
And talking.
And then my brother-in-law, very reluctant to get hearing aids for whatever stupid reason. And I told him, "Michael, you wear glasses. That didn't bother you.
Yeah.
You've used a cane when you needed
people
it.
People will think I'm old."
Exactly.
Well, the hearing aids are so small these days, you don't notice they're in. And you can just say they're earbuds.
Well, no, like Nick's and mine, it goes behind the ear. Yeah. So you don't see the clear wire actually going into the ear.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's very hard to see.
Right. They're a little bit of a pain in the neck, or rather pain in the ear, when you're wearing a mask. But that's really it.
Yeah.
They're incredibly useful and very tiny, and they work
very
great.
Expensive. You very don't expensive. Like I say, that's why I gave up wearing mine for a while, because I have to, for work, wear a mask all day,
right,
and I'm taking it on and off. I almost lost it.
Yeah.
One of them, and it's like, that's $2,000. No. So I said, I'd rather put up with a little, because I got decent hearing in my right ear. It's just the left ear that's messed up.
Right. Yeah, I haven't had decent hearing in either ear for 20 years. My wife is thrilled she doesn't have to yell anymore.
What?
Exactly.
So Archandra in the YouTube chat recognized our brand of microphone we're running from the video feed.
Oh, nice. All right, that music tells us that we are done for another week. Want to thank Dave Enright, want to thank Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco. Really want to thank everybody who called. Great series of questions this week, we very much enjoyed it. But that's it, we are done. It's been 2 hours of unadulterated joy. But sadly, you must go back to your mundane lives for another week. Please vote in the poll. And remember, if you use any sort of free app or shareware, think about throwing a couple of bucks at the program, will you? It's a good thing to do. We'll be back again next week. We'll see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?